and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
That's right. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, of course, lurking conservatives. Nice to have you all with us. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Man, I think I almost died yesterday. You know what I mean? I cooked the macaroni and cheese for you guys because I'm a nice guy and I'm some sort of a den mommy, you know. But not really. And I'm in the kitchen, and I'm cooking. I got air conditioner in the living room and in the bedroom, and I'm in the kitchen. I'm sweating. I have no idea because I'm consumed with the cooking, which is why I like to cook, because it takes me out of me, and I can focus on something that has results, you know, that I can see tangibly. When you cook, it's sort of like when it's done, you're like, oh, look what I did. And then you eat it in 3 seconds, and you're like, what happened? But anyways, hot. I sit down after I cook this thing. I think I had mild heat stroke. I had to drink like a gallon of water. I was nauseous. I slept for a half hour, and then I got back up again. It was debilitating, the humidity. I'm not complaining.
Have you eaten any of this yet?
Of course I did.
Oh, okay.
I ate plenty of it. Sure. You kidding me? Right when it came out of the oven, that's the only reason I cook anything. It's like, ooh, now I get to taste it, and then I can give it to other people to get fat.
Well, you know what you did, don't you?
What?
You know what you've done.
I started something?
You have bound the intestines of our entire staff at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Why does it got to be about poo?
Not poo.
Why are we in the
it's
poo?
It's not poo. It's pre-poo.
All right. We're in pre-poo at 8 after 6 in the morning here.
Hey, man.
Yes, sir.
Our crew said that it was worth it, your heat stroke and the poo.
Oh, good. Thank you very much. Well, apparently, according to Riley, we don't know what we don't have final conclusive evidence on what happens with the poo until later. Short dudes, this was a short-lived moment of glory with the NASA and the shuttle people. They've already grounded the next shuttle mission because the debris that fell off that they couldn't identify yesterday happened to be the exact same debris that flew off and caused the Columbia disaster. Can you imagine that? And that was on Ascension. That was coming back. So these guys are up in space knowing, I'm guessing, either they're up in space knowing what's going on, they're just going, hey, make some more stuff fly into our mouth again. You know what I mean? Like, hey, look, it's floating. Either they're up there doing that, or they're up there going, oh, man, this is ridiculous. They're up there doing, where is that thing? They're up there like Paxton was in Alien. Game over, man. Game over.
I'm
game
telling
over,
you.
Man. Game over.
So maybe... Maybe I hope, no, look, God forbid anything bad happens, but this is exactly the same problem. They thought they had fixed it. It wasn't fixed. The program has been grounded. And now, oddly, the astronauts are in the awkward position to actually test out some of the equipment they brought up with them.
Yeah.
That they only know works in the lab. So now the pressure's on. We'll see if it works. But they got this program needs more money. And I think space travel, I do think it's important because we're going to have to leave eventually. And
let's go.
Yeah, you know.
In-flight repairs. They're actually going to get a chance to test their in-flight repair regimen.
I think so.
And see, the scary part of this, Mark, if I was up there, which of course I never would be, but if I were up there and I found out through news reports or something, or somebody told me on the ground, this is insulating foam. That means it is to keep the heat away from you as you reenter the Earth's atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the insulating foam is for.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have some of it now.
Yeah, it flaked off. Yeah, that's an interesting point you bring up, Riley. I wonder if they have internet access up there, because there was a time when you were an astronaut, you were in space.
You were in space. You only heard what they told you.
Exactly. I wonder if they're up there like Google searching insulating foam.
Dudes. Game over, man. It's game over.
But, look...
Hey, a NASA engineer. You want to hear what a NASA engineer says about all of this?
Yes, I do, Mark.
God, I'm glad I'm not flying in this. Oh. It's an ugly story. It's a mess. Everyone's really, really disappointed. It is what it is.
Uh-huh.
Physics doesn't lie.
Well, great. That's comforting.
Yeah,
I hope
sure
he said that to the astronauts. Look, George Pataki is out, and he's unclear whether he will run for president. Many Republicans don't think he has the goods for that. Yet Denny Hastert says he has a bright future in the party, Riley. Is that possible?
Yeah, sure. Helping to raise money. That's his bright future in the
party. All right. That's probably true. It looks like it'll be Elliot Spitzer. What do you think? The new Democratic New York again?
Well, yeah, it probably will be, but don't, Democrats in this state should never count their chickens before they're hatched. I give you as an example the man who was not mayor for the last 4 years, Mark Green.
Yeah.
Who went into a general election with a gigantic lead and then watched it shrink away before his very eyes. Not saying that this would happen to an Elliot Spitzer, but he's got to be prepared. And my guess is his people are girding their loins for whoever decides to run. This is an important state for Republicans to control on the gubernatorial level. You know, this is a relatively strong, you know, the governor of New York has relatively strong powers as governors go.
Yeah, well, you know, Elliot Spitzer as a DA has been, you know, he's a fighter. You know, he's
Attorney General,
as Attorney General. He is a fighter, district attorney, Attorney General, the state Attorney General. That's different. He is a fighter. He got like $100 million out of Wall Street. They got them to cough that up.
He just ended up doing an investigation of payola.
Yeah.
In the radio business.
That's right. And BMG is going to make a charitable donation. But you think that's just the tip of the iceberg on that one, huh?
Well, it could well be. And see, what happened here is Spitzer made the feds look bad. Now the feds are following in a state official's footsteps because they're launching their own investigation into payola.
Spitzer also sued out-of-state power plants to reduce acid rain and smog in New York. Since they were out of jurisdiction, he filed that under the Federal Clean Air Act.
Yeah.
He's a fighter, and he's a solid dude. I mean, he's a guy with integrity. He's a guy that, you know, you look at and you're sort of like, he's a pretty earnest cat.
Yeah, he is a pretty earnest guy, and I'll tell you, I never saw Elliot Spitzer myself as any kind of a sex symbol, but when I was out in Los Angeles 5 years ago at the Democratic Convention, Elliot Spitzer came in from jogging into the hotel where we were staying, and women started swooning. I mean, you know, these Democratic women that go out, and they're the ones that bring out people to vote, the fundraisers and all that. It was like, Elliot Spitzer! It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's weird when earnestness gets people wet. You know what I'm saying? It's like, wow, that guy,
I know.
That guy
I know.
Has integrity.
It's a very deep thing.
I want to ruin his life. But in a good way. I want to be in a friendly way. As I was saying before, the heat in New York, nasty. I really do think I almost die. Look, what are you shaking your head about, Caleb? If you're not going to let the audience in on your little faces to me, you know, I mean, you know, I don't want to sit here and look at this sort of like, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, Mug. What are you talking
about? It's beautiful out right now.
Yeah, it is now.
Talking about today? If you let me finish the story, it was very exciting to wake up this morning and be relieved by the cool air. But tell me yesterday you weren't sick. A little bit.
I was in air conditioning all day, so I don't know.
So you didn't move. All right, so you're paralyzed by air conditioning. You were not allowed to leave your apartment or this environment. But that's good, right, when you can't leave the house? So I'm wrong. Is that what you're saying?
No, you're right. Relax.
I'm sorry, man. I'm all full of the pea and vinegar this morning.
You didn't
I'm
think he was going to pay for that macaroni and cheese he made,
I'm full
Kalo?
Of the beans. I'm full of the beans. No, it's just like, like I said before on the show, I don't mind humidity. I really like the heat, but yesterday it was like all of a sudden, and they warn you about this.
Oh, yeah.
You got to be careful. You make sure you're hydrated and not overextending yourself because all of a sudden you're like, where am I? What day is it? How come I don't know my name anymore? And you pass out, and that's what heat stroke is.
Yeah.
And you got to drink like a gallon of water. Apparently, the New York Independent System Operator said, this is the utilities cat, usage yesterday hit record highs, and this is for the second week in a row because there's a tremendous strain from the air conditioners and the fans and the, you know, and all the other things people use to cool themselves on the power industry there.
Well, yeah, and this is a place where new records are set in energy consumption virtually every day when it gets hot because people, more and more people with the cost of air conditioning going down. I mean, you remember the 15 years ago, an air conditioner, a good air conditioner cost you $400 or $500. Now you can get one for $100. So more people have them, more people use them, the demand skyrockets.
And I think they are a little safer and they are a little less draining and you have more options on your air conditioner.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And in New York, the nervous thing is, are they installed right so they don't fall on somebody's head?
There's a button on mine that says cool, and actually, if you hit that button, it'll go on for like 15 or 20 minutes, and then it'll say, are you cool?
And you okay, man?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, and then you say, no, I'm fine, man. It's like, all right, I'm going to shut down for a little while.
Yeah.
And then it does. And then it comes back on. So then it actually says, I'm a little hot, you? And then it comes back.
That's called New York energy efficiency.
Exactly.
You want some Marinos and such fish? Exactly. You should go across the street now.
Yeah, I think you should go shopping. Like, shut up. I get it. I didn't need you. You look, I don't. All right. Hey, you know where it's really hot? This is going to be a hell of a segue.
Oh, Lord.
You know where it's really hot? In Washington. Man, the polls are out. 15 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. Good morning.
Mornings Edition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi, yes.
It's Morning's Tradition on Air America Radio. We're doing the business here on Thursday morning. Today was the day, you know, when you drive into work in the middle of the night where people who work on the weekends come stumbling home. You know, this is their big party night.
This is the party night.
Was last night, or is it tonight?
It's tonight.
Friday morning. So what am I talking about?
It's really kind of crescendos. It crescendos from Wednesday to Friday.
Exactly. Yes, I got in today, and there was people sitting on the steps of the building, which always creeps me out.
They skateboard off of here.
Yeah, I know, but it's 4 in the morning, man.
I know, and they're skateboarding off. You know, we have that long, that really high arching stairwell.
Oh, I just hate being in that position where I got the Russian cat that drives me to work. Where I got to be like, hey, dude, we just hang out a second? like we're on a date. Will you just wait till I get to the door before you take off?
Kids are out of school, that's why.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Why not stay up all night and skateboard in the middle of the city at 4 in the morning? But that's what you do when you're a kid. Look at this. This is good news. A new Q poll. Quinnipiac. University National Poll, July 27, 2005. That's yesterday, my friends. 53% to 41% of American voters disapprove of the job President George W. Bush is doing. This is his lowest approval rating, putting it at 41 since becoming president. That's compared to a 50% to 44% disapproval rating in May 25th of last year. Dig that. This is the lowest, man. They are scrambling. This is it. People are starting to smell the stink. Here's a couple of other things that are important on the poll. Supreme Court nominee should speak up on abortion. That's what most people think. By a 60 to 32% margin, American voters say U.S. Supreme Court nominee John Roberts should publicly state his position on abortion. I think that's interesting, because what we see in these polls, which is surprising, and not all polls are great, but this is a good poll, right? This is a reputable...
It's a reputable poll. We're going to be talking to the director of the Quinnipiac Polling Institute next hour, Maurice Carroll. My friend Mickey.
Yeah, he's a buddy of yours?
Yeah.
You go back to what, drum corps?
No. He used to work at Newsday.
So back in the day at Newsday.
Yeah.
43% say the Senate would be justified in voting against Roberts if he doesn't explain his position. 47% say the Senate would not be justified, but what do they know, really? Right?
Look, what you see in this polling, Mark, is that the people, the respondents here, the voters who responded to this poll, parsed their information very closely. For example, they are overwhelmingly in favor of keeping abortion legal. In other words, upholding Roe versus Wade. Now, they have a problem with so-called partial birth abortions. They have a problem with not notifying parents in the event of a child having an abortion. But overall, they are solidly, by 65 to 30%, in favor of maintaining Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, and that breaks down sort of interesting. It's just like you said, that things turn like 70 to 24% in favor of a 24-hour waiting period for women seeking abortion, 74 to 21% in favor of parental notification before a minor can get an abortion, 76 to 15% are against a late-term or partial birth abortion. But as you said, the overall thrust is that 65% of the people polled, American voters, support the Supreme Court's 1973 Roe v. Wade decision. That's impressive, because this means that people believe in individual rights, believe it should be up to the woman, believe that people should have a safe way to do this if they need to. They know that people don't do this for fun. They know that people don't want to do this, but it should be available and safe for those who need it. And with parental notification, on some level, I see that as a little bit of a problem, because on some level, the parents, you know, will stand in the way of something that may need to be done.
Yeah, but I mean, this is, I think, an indication of how the religious right has controlled the margins of the discussion.
Yeah.
The 24 hours, the parental notification, the partial birth. They've controlled the parameters, but they have not been able to control the center. 2 out of every 3 Americans want to see Roe v. Wade upheld. And there's another statistic in here, and we're going to talk with Mickey about this a little later. The idea that Americans like the job that judges are doing better than they like the job Congress is doing and better than they like the job Bush is doing. Now, what does that say about the assault on the judiciary that was led by Tom DeLay?
That it was a failure and it was an overreach.
An utter failure.
Well, this is all good news in terms of people really seeing these politicians for what they are. They voted for them out of fear, you know, most of them. I'm not talking about the religious right, but even they're disappointed for whatever, for their reasons.
They got their own separate set.
That's exactly right. But what we're seeing here is that, is it right, you know, as we were talking about yesterday with these centricrats, these center-moving Democrats who are, you know, in a lot of ways not unlike Republicans, why are they trying to pander to religious extremists and people that, you know, really aren't on board with the individual rights around reproductive freedom, when it's clear to see, as you just said, that two-thirds of the people, almost 65%, are people who are comfortable with the Roe v. Wade decision from 1973.
And it's interesting that the move toward the center by many Democratic bigwigs in politics, including Hillary Clinton, began on the issue of abortion. It was earlier this year, the beginning of this year, when she started reaching out publicly saying we'd like to find some common ground with the anti-choice movement. And you see, little by little, I think she's trying to reach out, and some of these Democrats are trying to reach out to these marginal people who support Roe v. Wade, but oppose, for example, quote, partial birth, who want the 24-hour waiting period, who want the parental notification.
And I think a lot of what Hillary was saying in that initial statement was it's about education, that you can't really have abstinence education. What you need to do is have, you know, real education about, you know, what is going on, what happens if you do this. You should have, you know, reproductive education that talks about protection in order to be practical in lowering the numbers of abortions, certainly in people under 18.
Yeah, and the other question that comes out of this politically is whether or not you're really going to be able to change a whole lot of minds on the central question here, and that's Roe v. Wade. Is that 30% really amenable to someone trying to build bridges to them? I don't believe they are. I believe they are set. That 30% is set in stone. They don't want to see Roe versus Wade upheld, period.
Let's build a bridge to people through showing them that this administration is corrupt and sticking with this number, a 41% approval rating for George W. Bush, the lowest ever. And the Texas Republican Party is taking some hits. We'll get into that in a second. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Fair America Radio's Morning Sedition program. At 41% is where Bush's approval rating is as of today, according to a Quinnipiac poll.
There you go.
There we got it from the Quinnipiac University National Poll. Now, poll numbers don't mean a lot, but today they do to me. This is a good poll, and this is his lowest approval rating ever, which means, folks, that America is not on board. In many different ways, America is not on board with the Bush administration's agenda, and also with the fact that the Bush administration can no longer hide their lies, no matter how hard they try. They are bottoming out, ladies and gentlemen, bottoming out. Now, we're talking about the grand jury probe. We're going to talk about Special Prosecutor Fitzgerald. It turns out that his probe is becoming a lot more broad-reaching, a lot more wide-ranging, a lot more meticulous than anybody ever assumed. Now, what I want you to keep in mind, folks, is we've talked a lot about this here. You know, most of you know who Time Magazine reporter Matthew Cooper is. Most of you know who New York Times writer Judith Miller is. There is a new face in today's stories that we want to introduce you to, but I also want you to remember that not only is this probe, not only is this investigation about finding out who leaked the name of Valerie Plame and thus, you know, blowing her undercover identity in the CIA, but it's also about how this administration went about shifting responsibility from the White House to the CIA for having included 16 words in the 2003 State of the Union address about Iraq efforts to acquire uranium from Africa. That is the lie that Joe Wilson revealed, Valerie Plame's husband, that led to the bastards leaking his wife's name. Now, this is at the core of this because this is really a battle between the neocon death cult and the CIA, who they sold out because of their lies.
Let's set the stage here. This was during a very compressed week in the month of July 2003, 2 years ago this month, Mark. And what we have here, and we should put this in the proper context, on May 1st of that same year, George W. Bush got on that aircraft carrier and declared victory in Iraq. So the Iraq war, as far as Bush was concerned, was done.
Yeah.
So here comes Joe Wilson on July 6, 2003, with an op-ed piece in the New York Times that says, hey, the central premise of this whole thing, going to war, with George Bush saying in front of the world, essentially, that Iraq had sought uranium from Africa, and that this was according to British intelligence.
That's the 16 words right there. The British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa. Those are the 16 words that the CIA said. We know that's a lie.
Yeah. Now, shortly after that, July 12th of that same year, Walter Pincus, and this is the new information that's coming out, Walter Pincus apparently ends up talking to an administration official who he will not name. And this person, they were discussing a completely different issue. They were talking about Iraq nuclear capability.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly the guy veers off into a conversation mm-hmm. about Joe Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't according to me. This is according to Walter Pincus. Walter Pincus says that this person who was talking to him confidentially, quote, veered off the precise matter we were discussing and told me that the White House had not paid attention to the trip to Niger by Joseph C. Wilson, quote, because it was a boondoggle arranged by his wife, an analyst with the agency who was working on weapons of mass destruction, end quote.
Well, this is the interesting thing also, Riley, is what you're saying and what this Pincus, the reason Pincus is important is that his source was not Rove. His source was
nope.
not Libby.
Nope.
There is a third source, a White House administration official who talked to Pincus. We don't know who he is. Pincus does. And we can safely assume that so does federal prosecutor Fitzgerald. And the interesting thing about some of the recent testimony, especially from a former CIA spokesman named Bill Harlow, is that Wilson's wife had not authorized the mission. This was a mission.
No!
And that, you know, that people should understand that. And but what we're seeing is what you assume to be true, and what everyone assumes to be true might not be true. Rove is not some all-reaching genius that can control everything. As Riley was just saying, the White House at the time that all this went down was scrambling. They were freaked out. They were busted on lies. You know, he was about to go into the crapper, Bush was, and they were like, how do we distance the president from this? How do we save our asses? And they sat down, whether it was, you know, around this memo on that airplane or whether it was just, you know, Andrew Card and Rove deciding this, but they sat down and said, look, we're going after Wilson as a sign for other people not to, you know, not to take on our lies, not to take on our agenda, not to confront us or criticize us publicly, and we're going to sell him out. We're going to sell his wife out to teach him a lesson and anyone else who's going to screw us a lesson. And that's what happened. And that was institutionalized within the West Wing. Can I do this real quick, Riley?
Sure.
Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily we have the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and give it some headlines. From Voice of America, General says U.S. forces in Iraq could begin withdrawal next year. General says U.S. forces in Iraq could begin withdrawal next year. Translation, General wants troops out before hot, muggy civil war season.
Oh, God.
From Reuters, USDA probes possible third case of mad cow disease. Oh, man. We're going to have to talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah.
USDA probes possible third case of mad cow disease. Translation, USDA probes possible 3 millionth case of mad cow disease. From Associated Press, blind teen amazes with video game skills. Blind teen amazes with video game skills. Translation, teen signed for update of the Who's Tommy. So really, that's what we're looking at, is that because of Fitzgerald's tenacity, thank God. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long this is going to go on for, Riley. You told me it could, we might not see anything from this till what, in October?
Till October. And see, again, one of the central things here, Mark, is that Judith Miller, Patrick Fitzgerald had Judith Miller of the New York Times put in jail because I believe that he's trying to figure out if the person that spoke to Judith Miller, remember, she never wrote an article about this, but apparently did speak to an administration official about this.
Was the one who spoke to Pincus? To collaborate?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so that would be the third player, which would mean definitely a serious cover-up and a conspiracy. And, yep. And that could seal the deal. It's already sealed as far as I'm concerned. This is big.
And keep in mind, folks, that Pincus says his source has, in fact, testified before Fitzgerald's grand jury and acknowledged that they spoke to Pincus.
Mm. Listen to this, man. I mean, people are smelling the stink on this administration. America doesn't want it. And you know what's really interesting is John Kerry. John Kerry, during his campaign, was absolutely correct in how to handle the war in Iraq. And now Bush is doing what Kerry said anyways. They're changing the language of how they're approaching the war midstream. They think they're just going to slip it by us. It's profound. Last year, John Kerry said that the war on terror needed to be fought just as much with intelligence and diplomacy as with the military. Well, from all indications, high-ranking military officials have said that the war is unwinnable militarily. Unwinnable. And without political support, without without a lot of other things going on, that they're starting, they're going down. Right? Yeah. So they're starting to change their language now. General Richard B. Myers, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told the National Press Club on Monday that he had, quote, objected to the use of the term war on terrorism before, because if you could call it a war, then you think people in uniform as being the solution. He said the threat instead should be defined as violent extremists with the recognition that terror is the method they use. So all of a sudden the military is going to start talking real stuff after the administration exploited this language to freak out everybody and use it to buttress use the lies and this framing to buttress their attack on Iraq?
Well, yeah, it's using that frame to buttress their attack on Iraq, and it also gives them a nice slippery pole to slide away from Iraq if they're saying that it's not really a military problem anymore. It's a law enforcement / intelligence problem. Well, Rumsfeld runs the Department of Defense.
And, these guys, they laughed at Kerry when he made these suggestions.
Absolutely.
And they, what's that guy's name? Mark, who's the chair of Bush's reelection camp?
Roscoe.
Mark Roscoe. I hate that guy. That guy's annoying. He was a guy who responded to Kerry saying, in order to know who they are, where they are, what they're planning, and be able to get them before they get us, you need the best intelligence, best law enforcement cooperation in the world. Roscoe said, serving terrorists with legal papers will not win this war. This is pre-9/11 attitude that turns a blind eye to the threats that face our country. These bastards skewered Kerry, for having the right idea, and now they're co-opting Kerry in how they're framing the war.
Well, I mean, if you look at the war on terror, it has not been a screaming success. That's why they have to reframe it in the first place. And keep in mind that in London, at least, they are now apparently starting to arrest people left and right through law enforcement. It is not the British Army that's going into Birmingham and these other places and arresting people who are alleged to have been involved in the bomb plots there. These are cops that are doing this work, and unfortunately, we don't have cops doing the kind of legal law enforcement legwork necessary to bring down some of these terrorists around the world.
Exactly. And dig this. And this is also, I'm going to continue before we move on to Texas with General Richard B. Myers, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Yeah, continue with what he said. Now, this is the last thing that you would ever think would come out of this military's mouth in terms of working for this administration. He basically, although the military is heavily engaged in the mission now, he said future efforts require, quote, all instruments of our national power, all instruments of the international community's national power. See, the solution is, quote, more diplomatic, more economic, more political than it is military, end quote. This is General Myers saying that we need to engage in international diplomacy, maybe even use the UN. God forbid he say, international diplomacy. This is what Kerry was talking about the whole time. And now you have the Joint Chief of Staff, the head, the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, saying these kind of things.
Well, yeah, because it's after November. They used it to win, and now they don't have to use it anymore.
Again, this is why 41% approval rating as of yesterday from the Quinnipiac poll about Bush. This is why America is tired of this crap, and Texas as well is tired of it as well, and we'll get into that in a minute. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
This is Rob Zombie, and it says here, when I'm watching the sunrise after a long night of waking the dead and toasting nachos in the microwave, I listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
That's right, it's 50 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're going to go to Texas here in a second where the president and the Republicans are taking some hits. Thank God it's about time. Poll numbers for Bush at 41%, lowest ever. People are smelling the stink. Americans don't want what they're selling anymore. What do we do? I feel like, you know, we're getting a little edge here. What's the next step? What do we do as people on the other side? Do we keep hitting them? Do we start screaming? Do we just let it unfold? These are questions you're going to have to answer because we're going to, you know, be talking to our guests about what this poll really indicates. Maurice Carroll, director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute, is going to talk to us in just a few minutes about the findings in his recent poll, which, as I said, finds Bush's approval ratings in the tank and an overwhelming majority of Americans in support of Roe v. Wade. This is very interesting because of the propaganda abilities of the right and the propaganda abilities of the religious extremists of this country, you know, regular people are led to believe that they're crazy. Well, you're not crazy if you believe in personal freedom and individual rights. And we're going to get to that in just a second. But get ready to call us and tell us, you know, where we're going to go next as a party, as people who seek the truth and democracy in this country. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for Morning Sedition's Cliff Notes. The New York heat wave led to record-setting energy usage by city residents. I'm going to have to go into character here. Boy, it's hot in New York, I tell you. How hot is it? Let me put it this way. The hookers have a special. They're offering to blow on you. That's hot. On you. I'm telling you, folks, it's so hot, I've been hitting on women just hoping to get turned down cold. Huh? Let me tell you, that's hot, people. Huh? It was so hot that my cabbie was wearing a wet towel on his head. Hello? Is this hot? I want to tell you, folks, that is hot. It's so hot in Washington, people. It's so hot in Washington, people are climbing into the frying pan with Karl Rove just to cool off. Holy mackerel, that's hot, huh? Oh, I tell you, is this on? Hey, how hot did it get in Washington? The Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee say that it's actually too hot to grill John Roberts. Hey, come on, folks. I'm here all week. All right, the Rolling Stones are going to release their first studio album in 8 years. Scientists say the original... maybe we should put the... It's called The Big Bang, right? Is that the name of the album? Scientists say the original Big Bang was 13.7 billion years ago. That's some 500 years before the Stones released their first album. A town in New Jersey has created a pedophile-free zone. Pedophiles responded by announcing to the whole town, quote, "We have rights, too, you know. We also have candy and mini bites." At several points, the pedophile-free zones overlap with drug-free zones, creating what R. Kelly calls double jeopardy. Those are your Morning Sedition cliff notes for today.
Lord. I hope he's not downstairs, old R.
Oh, man, am I going to get hurt? Come on, he can take it. It's only going to sell him
a million
records. He's a little guy, right? No, he's a big guy.
He's not a big guy. He's not Suge Knight size.
All right, so you're going to watch my back on that one?
Well, sure. I'll call security.
Okay, thanks, man. I appreciate that. So the Texas GOP took a hit on the floor of that state Senate, state house today. GOP leadership helped to, the leadership of the GOP in Texas is, they stink. They're all bought. They're all paid for it. This is Tom DeLay's crew. And they're all, you know, they're all riding on big corporate contributions or bribes, however you want to look at it. And they just watched, apparently, as the Democratic minority and a few, you know, frightened Republicans voted bills down that raised the taxes on the middle class, that cut taxes for big insurance and other special interest groups involved in the scandals revolving around Tom DeLay, and that stiffed school children and teachers under the guise of education reform. They took hits on all the stuff they were paid not to take hits on, Riley.
You know, this is interesting what we see going on in this country right now, Mark, because we have in Texas the stink of scandal, and the Texas legislature is important because they're the ones that draw the congressional lines in the state.
Yeah.
And those lines have been drawn, and some say gerrymandered, over the last few years, so that the Republican congressional delegation is now dominated, obviously, by the GOP, by Tom DeLay and his minions. But you see this scandal going on with the Republicans in Texas. There's another scandal going on that no one's talking about involving Republicans in California, in San Diego, California, where they just had an election the other day.
With the real estate stuff?
Yeah.
With the house that they... Yeah, what is it?
Yeah, it's all about greed.
Right.
It's all about, you know, having the very things that the Republicans run against, you know, special interests and all. It's just a different set of special interests.
Well, I mean, I'm just glad that it's taking people. I'm sad it's taking this long because they were sort of bullied into voting the way they did because they were frightened by daily terror alerts and just the constant drumbeat of panic. Sure, they disappeared. But what they're really starting to see is that all of this Republican talk and all of this Republican ideas are really hurting working people in this country, are really putting people in a far more compromised position in this country, especially people that have to work two jobs, people without insurance, people who need to file personal bankruptcy to get started again are finding that they can't do that anymore. These people, the Republicans, have legislated the working people out of any options to get help or further themselves, either on just health care or personal finances or options in social programs. I mean, how long did I'm under the belief, Riley, that certainly people within the White House and within the administration proper, they don't care. They've made a fortune. You know, the people who are going to be left holding the bag are people or Republicans that want to continue to have a career in politics, and they're all running from these guys.
Well, yeah, and they have to run far enough so they don't get tainted by the stink just next year for many of them. All of them in the House, all 435 people in the House of Representatives are up for election next year. Good part of the Senate, up for election next year. If these Republicans want to stick with this, if they want to Velcro themselves onto what seems to be the sinking ship of the George W. Bush administration, it's going to cost them, and many of them are starting to wake up and say, wait a minute, I'm not going down with this guy. I got to cut a different path here.
Okay, dig this. Here's another one. Here's someone else taking a hit. Rick Santorum, the Catholic religious fanatic.
That's no account.
Am I going to have time to get into this? Apparently, yeah, maybe we'll do it at the top of the next hour, but a nun took a shot at Santorum in a letter to the newspaper there, you know, which is just beautiful. Sister Liguori, a teacher in the Diocese of Pittsburgh for 14 years, a member of the Sisters for Christian Community, wrote a letter to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette in response to Rick Santorum dodging paying for his kids' tuition by using a fake address. It's his house, but he doesn't live in it. We'll get into that in a second. It's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Sedition on Air America Radio.
That's right. It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America Radio, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and lurking conservatives, of course. I know you're out there as well. Look, folks, they've grounded the shuttle program because the thing that they didn't identify yesterday that flew off of the shuttle during a liftoff was the same thing that flew off of the Columbia and later caused the horrendous disaster that was the Columbia. Columbia landing. Now, this is insulating foam around the fuel tank. Obviously, the shuttle is up. They are going to stay up there for as long as they're supposed to stay up there, which I think is 12 and a half days.
Yeah.
And but they're going to ground the program because they realize that even though with the new designs, with the 50 safety measures they took, with you know, all of the work that went into this over the 2.5 years that they were revamping, something's wrong structurally with this machine. This is a dated machine. They do not have the money to update the shuttles, and they're not saying that that this is not possible, that everything's going to be okay. Things might be okay. Things probably be okay. But the fact of the matter is now the astronauts, if are in a position to actually use the tools that they've been experimenting with in the labs to repair the shuttle in flight, which is not a position that you would want to be in as an astronaut, certainly.
No, you would not. The fact of the matter is they've been working on this foam problem for 2 years. It's cost them hundreds of millions of dollars. And they didn't fix it.
Yeah. But, you know, it's an underfunded program, and someone's going to have to figure out whether, you know, whether it's necessary. I think it is necessary because I think we're going to have to leave soon. And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be part of that, but eventually people are going to have to leave. And it's going to be, you know, I don't know how that'll happen, whether it be a raffle or just people that voted Democrat. I don't know how it's going to happen. But I do believe that the space program is important and that they need a new machine here, clearly. What I'd like to get into now is Rick Santorum, one of my favorite whipping boys, because I think he's just heinous. He is the Republican senator from Pennsylvania. He is a close-minded, narrow-minded, religious fanatic of the Catholic variety. And I'm not knocking Catholics, but he's about to get knocked by a Catholic in what I'm about to read you. Apparently, Rick Santorum, who schooled his kid... He's got a little problem with school districting. He refuses to pay a school district, although his kid was homeschooled through the district, his kids, and he's, because he doesn't live in the district, he's got a house that he rents out that he owns in the district, and he's using it to get off the hook. I did that when I went to high school. I used my dad's office address so I could go to the high school, but I'm not a senator, all right? So this is what happens. A nun has sent a letter to the Pittsburgh
Post-Gazette.
This is Sister Liguori, a teacher in the Diocese of Pittsburgh for 14 years, a member of the Sisters for a Christian Community, wrote a letter to Rick Santorum, and I'd like to read you that letter. This is a nun. As a teacher, and we're talking about Rick Santorum, self-proclaimed man of God, Catholic. As a teacher for the Diocese of Pittsburgh for 14 years, one important lesson I learned was that no matter what I said to the child, whatever the parents said superseded my message. What parents say and how they live sends a message stronger than any teacher's voice, no matter what the issue. Senator Rick Santorum and his wife have taught their children a powerful lesson on civic responsibility by refusing to pay any tuition money to the Penn Hill School District for their children who attended the Pennsylvania Cyber Charter School. Released from that payment on a technicality shows that even an upstanding moral gentleman like Senator Santorum teaches his children the following lessons. 1. Take advantage of the system whenever you can. 2. The little guy pays while the rich and powerful guy gets away with it. 3. As a Catholic, you have no obligation to pay your share to the common good in spite of Catholic social doctrine. Finally, I am shocked that our religious leaders who see Senator Santorum as some sort of faith and morals hero have not spoken up on this issue at all. Signed, Sister Liguori Rossner, Sister for Christian Community, Bloomfield. How do you like that? That's a nun. So if you want to criticize me for criticizing religious fanatics, this is a nun taking Rick Santorum to task, which illustrates the broader element of what we're talking about today. People are tired of these guys, these moralizing, lying, corrupt bastards. Bush's approval rating is in the toilet, judging by a poll from the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute. And fortunately, we happen to have the director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute with us right now, Maurice Carroll. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Hey, Mickey, how you doing?
Mark, it hasn't been a... We haven't talked to each other in a long time.
In a long time, man. Long time. How you been keeping, all right?
Oh, bear enough. We've got an interesting poll on the Supreme Court.
Very. Yeah. Well, you guys, on the Supreme Court, on abortion, on its approval ratings. Let's start there. It seems to me that the broad message is people are tired of this crap. Now, tell me about...
crap are they tired of, Mark?
They're tired of Bush crap, all right? I know you don't have to say that, but I'm going to say it. Just how bad are Bush's approval ratings there, Mick?
His numbers are
Maurice,
the lowest...
Sorry.
we have ever measured, a 41 approve, 53 disapprove. The only people who are lower are Congress, 30 approve, 60 disapprove. So Washington, oddly, the Supreme Court comes out positive, 50, what's the number? Yeah, 50 to 39. So maybe Judge Roberts, if he's going to be a justice, will join a reasonably popular organization.
So let's talk about abortion a little bit.
Sure.
What were those numbers?
Well, there are a couple of things. The significant number, I guess, is that people think, Americans think, and this is a nationwide poll by Quinnipiac, 61 to 32, people think that Mr. Roberts should make his views known on Roe v. Wade, the abortion decision. And then when you get down to what people think, they approve of Roe v. Wade, 65 to 30. They say that should stand. The complicating factor is that people do believe there should be modifications. You know the big three things people are talking about?
Mm-hmm.
A waiting period, big, 70 to 24. People say, yes, do it. Parental notification, 74 to 21. And then the partial birth abortion question, they tell Quinnipiac, 76 to 15, they don't approve. So you have people saying, Judge, Mr. Roberts, tell us where you stand on this. Two, we stand in favor of it, but unlike some of the advocates, unlike the more vocal advocates, we do believe in modifications.
Right, but basically what they're saying, though, is they believe in individual, you know, rights and the freedom to act, you know.
They're saying they believe in Roe v. Wade with modifications.
Okay. All right, I'm not going to try and put words in your mouth. I'll wait till I get off the phone with you, and I'll take your information.
Quinnipiac has polled on this before, and let me give you the overall findings on abortion, because to me, it's an annoying situation when what you hear is from the extremes, but people are not at the extremes. Abortion on demand, 20%. This is nationwide. Right to life, no abortion, make it illegal, 12%. But in the middle, abortion with some modifications, 61%.
Okay.
So that you hear from both ends, but the people are in the middle, and the people, not a small number of people, but the great majority of people are in the middle.
Now, Mickey, it seems a little surprising to me that 61% of the people you polled want to hear from John Roberts about his views on abortion.
Yeah.
It seems as though the Republicans, at least, have said up until now that they didn't think it was all that important that he share that information.
Well, I think, Mark, what they've said, as I read, is that it's improper to ask a judge how he stands on a potential judge, how he stands on a potential case. And I think you a lawyer from the right, a lawyer from the left, maybe they'll tell you that's right, he shouldn't say. But, you know, people think that he should. People sometimes disagree with lawyers on a whole lot of legal matters, and who knows, maybe the people are right.
All right. Well, listen, Maurice Carroll, director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute, I'm going to now take your numbers and use them.
Please do.
And I really appreciate you taking the time for us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot,
okay.
Mickey.
Take care. So, look, folks, now we want to hear from you. Now, the word is out. You heard Mickey Carroll. You heard, what the numbers are. 61% of the people approve of Roe v. Wade with some modification. You know, approve of Roe v. Wade, bottom line. And that means that they also approve of people's individual right to have a safe abortion. They have some modifications they would make, but overall, that's where it's at. So, the religious right, who has been feeding us this line that we are in the majority of people who fight for reproductive freedom for all people, are wrong, and they're lying. So now that we have a sort of, stronger, point of view here, that what do we do? What do we as Democrats, what do we as liberals do now that people are starting to smell the stink of this administration with their corruption, their lies, and they're trying to legislate morality? What do we do? Do we scream louder? Do we watch them implode? What do we do? 866-303-2270 is our number. We'll be waiting to hear from you. It's 16 past the hour on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition. We can't do it without you. Call 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
21 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We got Morning Sedition Radio Theater coming up in a few minutes. We're going to be taking your calls in just a second about essentially 61% of this country believes in Roe v. Wade. 65%. 61% believe that abortion should have some modifications, right? Is that what the
No, no. 61% want John Roberts to state his position on it.
Okay, so 65%. Well, what we're saying is there's a couple of things going on here. The religious rights propaganda machine has failed in that you're not crazy. This is how most people feel. Most people believe in individual rights and in reproductive freedom. They may feel that there need to be some modifications and some accessibility to it, but overall, they believe in it, which is not what we've been led to believe by the freaks of this country. So they are in the minority. And what's happening also is that Americans are starting to smell the stink on George W. Bush and most Republicans, the corrupt trying to legislate morality. There's so many, the lies, and they're starting to smell the stink. So what do we do as Democrats and liberals and even Republicans who disagree finally with this horrendous administration and what it's reaped on this country? 866-303-2270 is the number. I'm not seeing a name here. I think this is Chris. Can we fix this? But go ahead and put this first call through. Hello. We have a caller. What's up, buddy?
I heard what you said, man.
Who is this? What are you talking about? What exactly?
You know what you said. You said it.
Come on, dude. I mean, if you're going to talk to me, you're just going to have to be more specific here.
I don't have to do anything. But I will. You're going to pay for it, Mark.
Who is this?
I'm the bill collector. I'm the man in the shadows.
All right, buddy. Thanks for calling, man. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Oh, so you want to play games now? You want to play
what do you...
games? You want to play games like a little boy?
No. What the hell is this, man? Why am I talking to this guy?
She's going to hang up on me now? You think that's going to work? I won't go away.
Mark. Dude, you creep me out a little here. Why am I talking to this guy?
I am?
Yes, you are.
Are you scared?
Yeah, I'm a little scared, yes.
Be scared, Mark. You'll be hearing from me.
Hey, who is this, man? Why don't you just tell me what your name is?
I know where you live.
Wait, who is it? Hello. All right, great. Well, thanks for putting that through. I really appreciate that. What happened to the button on that one? God, that gives me the creeps. All right, anyways, here, let's move on. Ike, listening in Charlestown, South Carolina. Ike?
Great, you got the Homeland Security on your butt now.
Oh, hey, you think that's who it is?
Yeah, what's up, Mike?
So.
What's happening, buddy?
Not much. Listen, man, you know, the more that this goes on and the further down the line these Republicans go, you give them enough rope, they're going to hang themselves. But I'm going to tell you this. If we don't get off our butts and get this voting system fixed, we ain't ever going to get this straight. And, oh, by the way, for you 15 scumbag Democrats that voted for CAFTA, I want to know who you are because you're getting phone calls today. It ain't going to be like one that Mark just got, but it's going to be one that's going to say, listen, which party are you in? You should have there is not any reason in the world one Democrat should have ever voted for CAFTA. They just screwed us and stuck us in the back. And if you keep that up, you'll see the same split we just did to the FL-CIO. Keep screwing with the working man, and eventually you're going to get your due, too.
Thank you.
This is interesting. This is the Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA.
Yeah.
It's like NAFTA, only for Central America. It is a free trade agreement that some people believe will shift American jobs to the Central American countries, and that the working person is going to get jammed up. And as he said, there have been a number of Democrats who supported CAFTA just like they did NAFTA.
Well, we're going to do a little homework and figure that out for you, you know, exactly, because I think he's right. I think that these trade agreements are exactly what leads to, you know, the compromise, you know, leads people with no jobs and nowhere to go.
But that's
Earl,
the problem.
Listening in Brooklyn. What's up, Earl?
Hey, Earl.
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hey.
You were saying which way to go, and, of course, the thought crossed my mind about what happened this weekend with this big meeting of the Democratic Leadership Council.
What a nightmare.
And, you know, all these big Democrats, Hillary included, go there, and basically their view is how to move the Democratic Party to the right.
To more Republican, yeah. It was Evan Bayh, it was Hillary Clinton, Governor Mark Warner from Virginia.
Right. It was all of them. And, you know, their thing is like, well, we got to add more money to the military. They don't come out. They're not opposed to the war in Iraq. They don't say anything about health care.
Right.
They don't say anything about programs. And right. I'm really afraid that these people, they've taken over the soul of the Democratic Party. And there's like no choice for most of us out there today.
I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you that they're definitely, their priorities are screwy, and they're like Republican lights, but I hope to God that they haven't taken over the soul of the Republican Party, because there's enough people
Democratic Party,
because there's enough people like you, and there's enough people like our last caller that are getting angry enough to actually mobilize, you know, the Democratic Party into something that we want it to be. I hope there's still hope.
Well, see, what has to happen, and I've seen this happen at political conventions in the past, what has to happen real quickly is that anyone who wants to be president under the Democratic banner is going to have to answer to the people who are progressives within the party. In other words, progressives will not back anyone who will not speak to a progressive agenda. That's how you play hardball politics within the party, but that's how you win. That's how the DLC is playing their politics. And we got to be clear about what the agenda is and put each one of these people up to muster. And if they don't make it, sorry, can't run.
Right, right. No, I agree with you. And a lot of people, it's interesting that, you know, as informed as, you know, I try to be, there's so much I don't know. And, you know, I've read some emails from people lately to the show, and there's a lot that people don't know about the Democratic candidates, not just about Democratic legislatures.
Yep.
You know, like, you know, we've talked about Joe Biden, we've talked about Hillary Clinton. Everybody's got, if you've been a senator, you've got skeletons in your closet and legislation that your name is on that you might not want to be on. We're going to have to look into that a little more as we move towards the midterm elections. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We've got the Morning Sedition Radio Theater coming up.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of Marc Maron and the Temple of Doom.
As we rejoin our story, Mark and Grace have continued their search for the Antichrist by tagging along with Marilyn Manson for his appearance on The Tonight Show.
Wow, Marilyn. Nice green room.
It's okay, but you're a big comedian, Mark. I'm sure you've been on The Tonight Show yourself.
Actually... No, I never have.
Oh, really? Boy, this is awkward.
Do yourself a favor and don't get him started. Just tell us about the Antichrist.
Well, according to what I've studied, Grace, he may not look all that evil. He's actually supposed to be really popular.
You mean like George W.?
In fact, he's so popular, people will follow him into battles he declares for false reasons.
Yeah, yeah, like, just like George W. Bush.
And he's supposed to set himself up in the temple of God, which I guess means he either acts like God himself, or he'll just act really religious.
I got it. I got it. Oh, my God. The Antichrist really is President George W.
Oh, well, you'll probably never find anyone like that. Look, I gotta go get my makeup on.
But you're not going on for another 4 hours.
Exactly, I'm running late. Bye.
You're a big comedian, Mark. I'm sure you've been on The Tonight Show.
Let it go, big guy.
Sorry, was Marilyn Manson just in here?
Oh, hey, Jay Leno. Great to see you. I'm Marc Maron. Yeah, I played some of the same clubs you did, and I had a small part in Almost Famous. See, it's on my resume as angry promoter.
Oh, yeah, Marc, sure. Great to meet you finally. Thanks for stopping by.
Look, I know we're not supposed to be in the green room, but...
Don't worry about it. Make yourself comfortable.
Thanks, Jay. You're as nice as everyone says you are. Hey, listen, I gotta tell someone. I've been running around the country trying to figure out who the Antichrist is, and I finally got it. It's George W.
All right, you got me. I'm the Antichrist.
What?
That's me, the beast. 10 horns, 7 heads, 10 crowns upon my horns. I secretly control things. Great and mighty through the church of television. Hail Satan.
Jay Leno is the Antichrist?
Yeah, I never thought anyone would figure it out. I even did a jaywalking statement asking people on the street, who's the Antichrist? Of course, none of them got it. I love that segment.
But you seem so nice.
I am nice. I'm just a guy trying to entertain people and bring forth the end times. Hey, you want to meet Pam Anderson? She's right down the hall.
Pamela Anderson? Sure. Wait a minute. Do not tempt me, Satan.
Well, then, I got no choice but to summon the dark powers. Hectate, Rav Sham, Beelzebub, Spawn of the Underworld, rise forth.
Oh, my God. The earth is opening up.
The times of trials and tribulations is at hand, and shall be cast into the lake of fire. Listen, you want a soda or a sandwich or something? I can send out one of the interns. Maybe some new cookies. Take as many as you want.
No thanks, Jay. I appreciate it. Boy, what a nice guy.
Now, where was I? Oh, yeah.
Will Mark and Grace escape the apocalypse? Will Mark ever break down and admit he wants a sandwich after all? And after Leno retires, will America ever really accept Conan O'Brien as the new Antichrist? Find out next time when we hear Pamela Anderson say,
Jay says I should tell my fans to accept the Mark of the Beast. Isn't that a cute idea?
That's next time on the final episode of Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. And stay tuned later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of News Daddy, Supreme Court Justice.
I've heard all these arguments for overturning Roe versus Wade, and I've just got one question for the National Right to Life. Why have you got to be ripping on ladies? Counselor for the pro-choice organizations, do you have anything to say to this?
Yes, Your Honor. Our organizations believe that while abortion is never a happy choice, the Constitution allows for...
I see. Well, I've heard enough to render my verdict. It's in the opinion of the court that you are one stone-fine mama.
I dissent.
Shut up, Scalia. Now, baby, let's retire to my chambers, and I'll show you my briefs.
That's later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, 38 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Oh.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're glad you're here. We'll be broadcasting from the legendary CBGB's in Manhattan on Friday, next Friday, August 5th. Go to morningsedition.com for more info and stay tuned for further details. Folks, Penn Jillette from Penn & Teller and comedian Paul Provenza will be in the studio to tell us about their new film, The Aristocrats, which I saw. Dirty, filthy, crass, rude, but it's a must-see, my friends.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that film...
Does everyone feel that way?
Not, you know what, they don't. Hopefully,
anyway.
our booker, Lucy Kerrigan, may be in to talk to us about her opinion. I've never seen someone respond to a movie quite like this. It makes you want to make fun of her. The film chronicles the life and telling of one of the comedy's oldest and dirtiest jokes, which I have to admit, before seeing the movie, I did not know the joke.
Depravity!
Yeah, it is, but I should have known the joke, and I felt a little left out that I didn't. What?
Sorry to bother you, but that guy that threatened you was on the line again.
That same guy? All right, what? What? Hello, yes.
It's me again, Mark.
All right, man, I get it. All right, I get it's you again. So why don't you get to the point? What is it that you want? Is there something that I can do for you? What's the agenda here, buddy?
All in due time, Mark. Besides, you don't tell me, I tell you.
I haven't told you anything.
And you won't. Am I getting your attention, Mark?
Barely, buddy.
Oh, well, then I guess I'll have to see what I can do about that. Getting your attention.
Look, you're not getting it yet, all right, pal?
I saw you this morning, Mark. Do you wear shorts and flip-flops to work every day? I'm watching you, Mark.
What are you laughing at, Riley? Why is that funny to you, this guy?
Shorts and flip-flops every day, huh?
And so what is that, a stalker?
I think Riley secretly wants someone to threaten you.
No. I've been threatened by the best, trust me.
Really?
Yeah, man. They had the cops come up here about me being threatened.
Oh,
well,
man.
Well, tell us about that. What happened?
Well, a guy first started sending letters saying he knew where I lived, he knew my family, he was going to kill me.
Why?
Because he didn't like my pro-black attitude.
Really?
Was it a white guy?
Yeah, was it a white guy?
I don't know.
You still don't know?
They arrested him, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, they did. They didn't arrest him. They detained him.
And you didn't know if he was white or black?
I never found out. I didn't care.
Oh.
You know, I mean, I was young then. At that time, it was like, I didn't pay any attention to it for a long, long time. And then finally, my boss found out about it one day. And he said, look, you can't be going. You got to call the cops about this.
Well, what happened? Did he write letters?
Eventually, he called.
Okay.
Yeah. Eventually, he called and said, "You know, I'm going to find you. I know where you live. Blah 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 blah."
Yeah. It's wow. You know, it's what I have found in my experience with with my marginal fame, in terms of like, you know, healthy stalkers, not necessarily the scary ones, but there are people that latch on and they stalk you a little bit. Here's what you do. Here's the plan. Take them to lunch.
Oh no! I don't know.
Here, you know why?
Why?
Because they have an elevated opinion of you. They've decided what you are. Okay, so if you actually sit down and have lunch with them, you'll disappoint them.
Oh, like right? At a Big Mac?
Yeah, whatever. Well, it doesn't matter. There's no way you can't disappoint them. You know, there just isn't, because their idea of you is going to be so elevated that if you sit down and you're just a guy that's sort of like, you know, hey, you got a Kleenex? You know, if you're like just a regular guy, they're like, wow, you're not anything
like
I thought.
You're creepy, yeah, just like me.
Exactly. I don't need this. All right, here we're talking about creepies. Ocean Township, New Jersey has passed. I'm all about segues today. Ocean Township,
Brick Township.
Oh, is it? I thought it was Ocean Township. Ocean County. Brick Township. There you go. A law creating, they passed a law creating a pedophile-free zone, meaning that listed released sex offenders are not permitted to live there. Now, the ordinance not only bars sex offenders who committed crimes against children from living 2,500 feet from a school, playground, or daycare center, but here's the hinge. Here's how they did it, because this does seem a bit unconstitutional on the surface of it, is that, you know, you can't say to somebody, you can't live in our town. But what they did was they added to that list of places these accused or convicted pedophiles can't live 2,500 feet from a school bus stop. Yeah. Now, there are 2,000 school bus stops almost everywhere in Ocean Township, which means it gives these guys no option but to move to the beach or the outskirts of town or somebody. Eventually, if all cities do this, they'll have communes of pedophiles.
Or they'll have barges out in the river somewhere.
Floating pedophile barges.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing that a local city council or a town council will do in an effort to try and keep their kids safe. And everyone wants to keep their children safe. The issue of where pedophiles who have done their time, mind you, released sex offenders, where they're going to live, is a vexing issue. The extent to which their neighbors should know about their past is a vexing issue.
Well, that's it. To me, the Megan Law, is that what it's called? Megan's Law is, there was no way that couldn't lead to this. I mean, it seems to me that it almost facilitates this. I don't know that any community is going to accept a convicted pedophile into their neighborhood knowing who it was. Did you see that movie, The Woodsman?
I never saw it.
It's a very interesting movie with Kevin Bacon. It's a dark movie. It is about this very situation. It's about a guy who was released from prison, a convicted pedophile, but he lives right across the street from a schoolyard, and it's about his struggle with himself after doing his time, having the same desires he had going in, managing those desires, the lesson he learns, and ultimately, you know, in a Hollywood-ish kind of ending for a movie that was based on a play, because usually those end a little more darker. But this movie was very dark, but he actually is a sympathetic character, and he actually is, at least temporarily in the film and in the play, able to transcend the sort of compulsive, addictive, and perverse behavior that leads him to desiring to touch kids.
You know, most people who have kids, on the other hand, are not willing to risk that most people are going to end up like Kevin Bacon's character in that movie. In other words,
most people don't.
Redeemed.
They don't.
No, they don't. They figure once a pedophile, always a pedophile. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Now, the problem is that in most cases, you know, registered sex offenders are a matter of public record. The question then becomes the extent to which the public wants to find out the information, finds out the information, and disseminates the information.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that what we're going to see here is there is certainly a constitutional battle to be had around this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it happened in the town where I live, where somebody actually came and distributed flyers in the middle of town about a registered sex offender who had moved to the town.
And what happened?
I think he moved, as a matter of fact. I think he left town.
It's like, I imagine that these people will go to places that don't have Megan's Laws and try to disappear into the community.
Yeah, that is probably the... Now, one of the problems they have is that some of them who are supposed to register don't, or they don't let authorities know about their whereabouts, and that's their way of trying to disappear. That's their way of trying to start over. Of course, if they get caught, they got big problems.
Right. You remember the Truth Tour, Riley?
The
right-wing... radio personalities, second and third tier, fourth tier radio personalities. Well, I haven't heard anything about that other than what Lawton
Smalls,
Well, we've got another truth tour, and it's very important because this truth tour has been hijacked in the sense that there were pictures taken, there was footage taken of what's really going on in Iraq, and now the person who led this truth tour wants to know where that footage is, and that person is Jessica Simpson. We'll get into that in a second. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Who would have known? 51 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Jessica Simpson was in Iraq. Who would have known that?
Is this a joke?
No.
Is this the beginning of a bit?
No.
You sure?
I'm positive.
Okay.
She went there to, you know, to tape her show, some variety show with her husband, and perform for the troops and do that number.
For the troops?
Yeah, who the hell knows? Did you see that new video from the Dukes of Hazzard of her doing Boots Are Made for Walking?
No.
They succeeded in completely dirtying up line dancing. It's the only good thing about the video.
Oh, wow.
Her voice stinks. You know, the whole thing's ridiculous. I don't think she's that hot, but she moves well. I will say that. And in this video, they do this line dancing, and I imagine there's a few cowboys that aren't too happy.
Uh-oh.
But there are other cowboys that are like, yeah, why can't we do it that way? Anyways, we got another call from Sixth Avenue saying that this show has to make more money, obviously. Otherwise, we can't afford M&M's for Riley's trailer.
So, what?
Yeah, that's right. No more M&M's in the trailer, buddy. So we're working our sponsors into the show. We're working on sponsors into the show today. This is today's product placement minute. Play the happy product placement music, Chris, will you? So what's our product placement news story of the day, Mark?
Well, as if Pakistan didn't have enough problems, it's been plagued by a serial killer.
You mean a serial killer like the Firefly family in Lionsgate Films' wild new horror thriller, The Devil's Rejects?
Wait a minute, didn't that open last Friday in theaters nationwide?
It sure did, Mark.
Well, it's kind of like that, except Pakistani police arrested a man they think killed people who were sleeping in parks and along footpaths in the eastern city of Lahore. They have not released the suspect's name.
You know, when I go camping, I'd be lost without a genuine Coleman Electric North Star lantern. The U-shaped fluorescent tube provides maximum brightness, yet stays cool to the touch.
Don't be fooled by imitations, though I doubt a lantern would have helped in this case. The killer's modus operandi was to bludgeon his victims to death with rocks.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yep. Police think he killed a dozen people that way in the last 3 weeks. Then he'd usually leave the bloody splattered rocks right next to his victims' bodies.
Jeez. That's about the worst thing I've ever heard. Say, Riley, what have you got there?
Oh, it's the new Pepsi Edge, with 50% less sugar, carbs, and calories than regular colas.
Awesome. No wonder they call it the Edge. And that's today's product placement minute.
God, I'm glad I don't know anybody named Musharraf.
We got a call from Chip in Florida. Chip, good morning. What's on your mind, buddy?
Good morning, Mark. Yeah, I wanted to get back to the sex offender pedophile thing.
Okay, let's refresh the audience's memory. Brick Township in Ocean County, New Jersey, has made it pretty much illegal for an convicted pedophile to live in their town.
Yeah, the point I wanted to make was it's kind of an illusion. What they're doing is they're excluding people that are identified sex offenders when there's probably another huge portion of sex offenders out there that are unidentified that legally get processed, but because of either hiring a good lawyer or a poor case on the state's attorney's part, they don't get prosecuted or identified. Like, that identification thing is part of plea bargaining. You can plea bargain that out. Just say, okay, I'll plead guilty to this charge here, but you won't register me as a sex offender, and sometimes state attorneys are willing to make that deal.
Oh.
So meanwhile, the only people they're going to keep out are the people that we have identified on the system, not anybody else.
Yeah, and those might be people that are actually trying to make a decent go at it. That's an interesting call, and it might also just be a PR campaign for real estate people, so they can go, oh, by the way, this is a pedophile-free zone.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Chip. I appreciate it. So you know, this is the important news of the day. Jessica Simpson wants to know where the missing footage of her and her husband, Nick, where the missing footage of their trip to Iraq is, because she thinks Americans would like to see how bad conditions are there. Now, on some level, folks, good for her. They went there to do a variety show. They went there to do a show for the troops, and Jessica Simpson, I'm no fan of hers, and I, you know, I know she's an icon right now, and she's the new Jenny McCarthy / Pam Anderson / blonde thing that is popular now. I know that, but good for her in the sense that, like, what I've been saying here is that if Americans really saw the full truth of what's going on there, they'd be horrified. The right is always criticizing the liberal media for only showing the negative. Well, I believe it's probably twice as bad as they represent it to be, and she went there with the intention to entertain the troops fine. And she went there with the intention of you know, being taken care of by the troops, fine. But she also saw something that freaked her the hell out and scared her and made her horrified. And she's now saying, you know, where the hell's the footage? Now, I don't know what the big question is. I mean, you know, have you ever heard of editing? Talk to ABC. Go find a friend in the editing room. The footage is there. They just decided it wasn't part of the funny show you were trying to put together, Jessica.
Well, yeah, and that is the thing. They were not trying to show the kinds of things that Jessica and Nick Simpson actually experienced over there. This was not some war. This wasn't Frontline that sent them over there. This was ABC. They were trying to do an entertainment show. They didn't send Walter Cronkite. They sent Jessica Simpson.
Yeah.
Now, maybe it's unfair of her to think that they would actually do something serious with, you know, footage they did for something that she obviously knew ahead of time.
Well, you can't really cut from a song and then have her go, hey, Nick, here's the part where the baby's bleeding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a good segue.
Oh, wow, was that a shell that just landed here in the green zone?
Wonder if anybody died. These boots are made for walking.
No, it doesn't work. But look, I'll give her credit. I am not a big Jessica Simpson fan. I wasn't a big Pam Anderson fan. But at least she's speaking out. Some entertainers would go over there and they would have been fine with whatever they came up with. At least she opened her yap.
Well, you know, I think that what they do is they go over there to build the troops' morale. And I think that what she had was a real moment of like, oh, my God. You know, this is a real war, and there are really things going on that I never knew about, and I'd like other people to see these things.
Absolutely, and she, I think, also has a newfound respect for what the troops are going through.
In the new video, you can watch her wash a car in a bathing suit.
Oh, that's
And I'm not a fan. But
I know the troops got that one, though.
Yeah, when we come back, you know, we've got Penn Jillette and Paul Provenza to talk about the Aristocrats, one of the crassest movies made about comedians I've seen, and I'm one of them, 57 past the hour.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio that you're listening to. I'm done with this soy creamer. I'm done with it. All right, Chris, Mark, I'm done. I'm just announcing it. I thought I'd try it because I'm cutting back on the dairy outside of the tray of macaroni and cheese we inhaled this morning.
Yeah. You're getting rid of dairy, and you fed enough cheese to, you know, congest everyone's colon in here.
You're obsessed with the colon. You know what that's a sign of? Pops. Anyways.
Wait a minute. I don't hear anybody snapping on any gloves in here.
All right. Well, this soy creamer is kind of grossing me out because it's doing something in my cup. It's like there's canola oil.
It's dancing,
oil.
Right?
I don't even want to talk about it. Look, let's talk about this. Yeah, well, they got to, if it's soy, it's not cream, so they got to make it look like cream. So they mix a bunch of stuff together to make it seem like what it's supposed to be. And sometimes those things separate, and you're like, oh, my God, the illusion's breaking down, and my coffee's a mess.
Wait a minute. Has it got those little things? They look like sperm or something?
Where are you going with this, Riley?
I don't know.
Riley's obsessed with something.
A minute ago, we're in the colon, and now we're in the sperm, and now it's in my coffee, and thanks a lot.
Hey.
Let's get one of the interns, little Goliath or big Goliath, to go get me another coffee. Thanks. And Anthony and Dave are doing a great job.
They are great people.
And if you come out to CBGB's next Friday.
They'll be at the door.
Yeah, they'll be at the door. Big Goliath will be, but he's a gentle giant, so, you know, don't be afraid. Very bright guy, too, Anthony. And so, look, that's that tip. We're going to be at CBGB's in Manhattan on Friday, August 5th, next week. Got a call from an ex-NASA employee, actually, who corrected us. We've been saying, now, it is true that NASA has grounded the space shuttle program, but the debris that flew off of the shuttle during takeoff on Tuesday, we were saying that it was the same debris that hit the tank that caused the Columbia disaster. This is not true. We were told by somebody from NASA that this was actually a foam insulation on the booster rockets, which are, you know, cut loose after takeoff. So the shuttle that is up in orbit now is not in any compromised condition other than the fact that it's from 1981 and has had about 2.5 years worth of repairs and 50 new safety things put on it. But I guess they are grounding the program specifically because they realize, look, you know, we need some dough. We need to make this right. We can't have things flying off of the shuttle on takeoff. Off whether it is dangerous or not, this is supposed to be solid. They need to update some stuff over there. But we misreported. reported it, the astronauts are not in any danger in terms of being in the same situation as the Columbia was. What do you got there, Riley? Something we need to deal with right now?
Well, no. I'm actually saying the same thing, that the foam is on the external fuel tank that does not go into space. The problem is it could damage the insulating tiles on the shuttle.
Now, that's an email you got there.
Yeah, that's an email.
Oh, see, we got some smart listeners, some informed listeners. Appreciate you correcting us. The copy we were referring to didn't specify. Made it a little more ominous than that. So, Pataki, George Pataki, is out. He says he's not going again. He's not going to run for governor again. We don't know if he's going to run for president. We don't know what the hell he's going to do. But I'll tell you, this opens the door for Elliot Spitzer, our current state attorney general, to step in and make this a Democratic state again. I like Spitzer.
Well, you know, it's funny. New York, California, there have been a number of so-called blue states across the country where you have red, you know, you have Republican governors. You have one in California with Schwarzenegger. You had Pataki here for three terms.
And he's like the right now the longest sitting governor in one string of terms.
Yeah, three consecutive terms.
Here in New York.
A fourth term in New York has been real, real tough to pull off. Mario Cuomo was going for a fourth term when George Pataki beat him. It's not an easy thing to do. So, and of course, you know, governors in New York are not term limited like some of the local officials are.
I'll tell you, I'd like to see Spitzer. Go ahead.
No, I mean, right now, the question for the Republicans is, who in the world do you run against a popular attorney general who has a national reputation for having brought low corporate corruption, which, you know, voters love to hear about?
Righteous guy.
Yeah, righteous guy. And a guy who's gotten, you know, who's actually saved some money for consumers here in New York, saved some money for shareholders who had been duped in several cases. You would think maybe Wall Street money might line up behind his opponent, but right now he has no opponent.
Yeah, but, you know, isn't something like that, doesn't that rely on the opponent being effective? Can you just buy a governorship? Can you really?
No, you can't. I mean, look, people say Mike Bloomberg is buying the mayoralty here in New York. Well, yeah. There have been millionaires before.
Yeah.
Ron Lauder is a prime example, mm-hmm. who ran before for mayor and didn't get a vote. I mean, really just, you know, what, 3-4%. So it's not just money. You got to have money. And you got to have a plan.
53-41 of American voters, 53%-41% of American voters disapprove of the job President George W. Bush is doing. That's his lowest approval rating ever. This is according to a new Quinnipiac University National Poll from yesterday. This is important because this means that America's tired. It's tired of this crap. It's tired of the lies. It's tired of the deceits. It's tired of the legislation that is compromising the working people of this country. It's tired of radical fundamentalist religious fanatics trying to legislate morality. They're tired. And you know, the interesting thing about also in this poll is that by 61-32% margin, American voters say U.S. Supreme Court nominee John Roberts should publicly state his position on abortion. And also, 65% of American voters support the Supreme Court's 1973 Roe v. Wade decision. And that's important to know, because that means that what we believe about religious fanaticism taking root in this country and creating a theocracy is not a very strong case. It's a lot of hype, and people believe in individual freedom. Some people want it to be a little different in terms of who's allowed to get an abortion in certain situations, like minors and availability of over-the-counter pills. But by and large, people believe in Roe v. Wade.
Two out of three Americans believe in Roe v. Wade.
That's important to know. Now, coming up, we've got Penn Jillette and Paul Provenza to talk about their new film, The Aristocrats, which is filled with comics, and I'm looking forward to talking to them, so stay with us. It's 12 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Seventeen past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. All right, here we go. They say it's one of the oldest and dirtiest jokes in comedy. We can't tell it on the air because we'd be taken off the air in about 10 seconds, but the punchline is The Aristocrats. And our next two guests made an entire film chronicling the joke's life and telling of the joke. The Aristocrats opens tomorrow in New York and Los Angeles and nationally on Friday. August 12th, we're pleased to have Penn Jillette from Penn & Teller and comedian Paul Provenza, the film's executive producer and director, respectively, in the studio with us. I gotta tell you, Paul, I have known you for years. I've been doing comedy for 24 years, and I got to admit, I've never heard this joke. Does that make me an ass?
No, no. An amateur.
Is that what it is?
You've been doing comedy for 24 years.
Oh, I know all the guys that were in that movie. I've sat down with those guys.
Well, apparently
they don't like you enough to tell you the
Is that what it was?
I think so, yeah.
They don't really consider you a friend.
Is that what it is?
No.
There is
something generational about it, and it kind of ebbs and flows, and it's just one of those things. There's a few people in the movie that hadn't heard it. A lot of people.
Like, which ones? Because I noticed that. I noticed that some people were told the joke. I mean, you're told the joke, you can riff on it. It's easy.
That's kind of the point of the movie.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for coming. Nice to see you. I guess we're done here.
I'm so glad you understood it. So glad.
So, I know, I thought some of the high points, I loved Carlin's rendition. He made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, well, Sarah Silverman. It's like an opus. It's beautiful.
She's great.
Well, why don't we explain for people who are listening who haven't seen the movie, who don't know the joke like I didn't, even though I've been doing comedy for 25 years. Go ahead. So why don't you tell what the joke is?
A guy goes into an agent's office, says they got a terrific act. The agent says, what's the act? And then you improvise, and then you say the Aristocrats.
Improvise. Extremely improvise.
Extremely improvise. And, of course, the whole point really is to improvise the most disgusting, horrible, rude, vile, vulgar
incest,
activity.
Blood, poop.
Find out where your audience's line is and cross it.
Yep.
This joke has nothing to do with the audience.
As Eddie Gorodetsky says, in some versions of this joke, in some rooms with the right audience, you could just be eating pork.
Yeah.
Whatever the line is.
Yeah, well, actually, the audience, everybody's talking to us.
Right.
So they're trying to cross lines for us, is what they're trying to do.
But Penn Jillette's line has got to be way the hell out
there. Gillette's line was last seen out where Danny Gans is popular. Way out where the buses stop.
Because I noticed that like, even when Bob Saget, there were people who were telling the joke in the film that were crossing their own lines.
Not Saget.
I know that. I know
Very
Saget.
Bad example.
Actually, I know Saget, but the weird thing was is that he was having moments there. He does. It's not a matter of personal line, but people grow up. They're different people. And he had those moments where he's like, I can't believe
It's actually, Saget is actually a wonderful example, because what Saget does is almost definitive of the premise of the movie, which is to examine the notion of it's the singer and not the song. What do you bring to the table? What's your unique individual take and worldview and perspective and artistry? And what Saget does is he actually incorporates his image into how he chooses to tell the joke.
That's his line.
By acknowledging that it really seems like he's really crossing some lines there, he makes it doubly funny, and he uses what he personally brings to the table. It's actually a definitive example, I think.
Now, you guys decided not to have this movie rated, is that right?
Yeah, yes. The MPAA is supposed to be voluntary. And if it's voluntary, then people can opt out. And the MPAA is a non-elected, anonymous organization that makes decisions based, as far as I can tell, arbitrarily, with perhaps some deference for money. If you're rich enough, it's apt to be more PG-13s. And I hate the MPAA. I think it's a cartel of mediocrity. The whole idea that we will censor ourselves before others censor us is really deeply un-American.
But now you're also looking at a situation where, in many instances, if the MPAA doesn't rate something, some theater chains won't touch it.
And that's absolutely their right, and I applaud them for it. AMC just did this little publicity stunt where they said they wouldn't show our movie. And if you own a theater chain, you are not beholden to anyone except your audience. And if you want to be a shop owner who doesn't want to carry vegetables in your supermarket, they have that choice. Now, the fact that there are rumors going around. We shouldn't even repeat that.
Go ahead and repeat rumors.
See, we don't want to stoop to their level.
No, yeah, but it's going to help you.
We would never bring this up because it's unsubstantiated.
There are rumors, and I do not believe that there is an Ebola AMC virus that's in the popcorn. Atlanta Center for Disease Control.
Just a few hundred monkeys in one test is not enough proof.
A few hundred people getting sick from the popcorn. I don't even believe it happened. One journalist mentioned it.
All right, so we can't substantiate it, but it is out there.
It's out there. It's out there. People getting very sick.
But we would never bring that up in any sort of defense.
And you're just trying to help people.
We're bigger than them.
Yeah,
we're trying to tell people that the rumor is not true.
Exactly.
Do not believe that AMC popcorn is poison.
We'd rather go down the angle of just say it's an interesting thing to note that AMC has chosen not to show a movie with some of America's finest comedians,
but also
around telling a joke after they, you know, ran Irreversible, which has depictions of violent anal rape, and L.I.E., which has depictions of, you know, pedophilia.
And those weren't even that funny.
So, and there's nothing funny about those.
I thought that, well, I did. But yeah, that's me.
That's the Penn Jillette line.
I dug Irreversible.
The line's
hard to find.
I thought my line was far out until I met Penn.
But on some level, we talked to a guy, David Poland, who does reviews, and he's sort of like a marginal cat. I would think that this them with AMC saying they're not going to show you a movie, that's only going to raise the interest for a certain type of audience.
That's the game you're supposed to play. You know, he's supposed to take a moral high ground that we're supposed to be like Michael Moore and be all martyr about it.
You don't have to do anything.
It's going to draw people. Although
to.
You've got
to
do it. X number of chains won't show it. So X number of people can't get easily to that theater. There's Y amount more press. And you really have to do the math to see if we actually end up doing better.
Well, it's going to be on the DVD release, so really, wouldn't it?
Right. It'll be on the DVD, but we'd also like it to do well theatrically.
Sure,
because
sure.
Seeing this movie in the theater with other people laughing is a really important part of the
Mark,
experience.
As you know, it's not the same listening to a comedian with four people in the crowd as it is listening to a comedian with 200 people
Mark.
In the crowd.
That's true. Yeah. And I think that
it's a very collective experience. It really, and plus, one of the aspects of the movie is that people's lines are fluid, and it's really interesting to see when the line is crossed for you personally and relative to the people around you, and that adds another dimension to it that's unintentional but a reality. And so the more people in a room seeing this thing with you, the more multidimensional this movie becomes.
Kevin Pollak couldn't even finish a joke. It's very exciting to see the difference between men and women responding. Even our booker, who I guess did the pre-interview with you guys, was sort of like, I didn't like it. I don't understand. I wonder if there are differences in that.
In fairness to women,
yeah,
there are a lot of women that laugh a lot at this.
Sure.
And I think that I don't want to fall into the trap of going, you know, oh, women don't like dirty
right?
jokes. That seems very, very old-fashioned.
Right.
There is nothing more American than a dirty joke. There was not one 4th of July celebration in this country that did not have someone telling a dirty joke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's also interesting that we address that point, actually, in the movie, because among professional comedians that are in the movie, there is this idea of it's different for women. And then Lisa Lampanelli comes out after you see Judy Gold and Whoopi Goldberg, you know, getting down just as raunchy as the guys do, you know.
Who is that? Carrie Snow and Sue Kolinsky
and Kathy Ladman. But, you know, you have Rita Rudner talking about Phyllis Diller, who I think her perspective is more generational than it is gender.
She seemed honestly shocked
she's just brilliant. She loved it.
she was setting up
the fainting part, which we pay off later on. But in the movie, the issue comes up that, you know, how do women react differently in terms of telling it, whatever. And Lisa Lampanelli comes along and just cuts right to the chase. She said, you know what? It's a joke. If funny is a guy thing, I'll strap it on.
Yeah.
So even among women, it's
and she has.
Individual.
I don't know if you've seen her act.
She.
Yeah. Well, thanks, fellas. Penn Jillette, Paul Provenza. The movie is The Aristocrats. It's definitely worth
it. And it opens all over the country, except for AMC theaters, which have that sick
that the Ebola. But we hear.
Not true.
Then
it opens everywhere else. Unsubstantiated. Okay. But man, is that rumor going like wildfire.
I know. Thanks, fellas. Thanks for sharing the public
Thanks
service
a lot.
Announcement.
Well,
again, The Aristocrats opens tomorrow in New York and Los Angeles and nationally on Friday, August 12th. Look, we're going to have the response of the fairer sex in just a minute. Lucy Kerrigan, who I did reference when I was talking to the fellas, is here, and she's going to tell us what she thinks. And we had, you know, we were with her yesterday.
Yeah.
It's once you know somebody is offended by something, you know that the wall is up. It's so fun just to keep throwing stuff against that wall, isn't it? Just to keep going and going and pushing and pushing. And it got to the point where the references we were making, she literally, I think, you know, took offense and said, it's just not funny anymore. It wasn't funny to begin with. It's not funny anymore. And, I'm done with it.
Uh-oh.
And I actually thought she didn't like me anymore. But she'll be in here in just a second to give us her point of view on this. You're listening to Morning Sedition. It's Air America Radio. It's 27 past the hour. We'll talk to you in a second.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We were talking with Penn Jillette and Paul Verbenza before the break. They are now gone. But we were talking about the movie The Aristocrats, which opens in New York and L.A. nationwide. Opens in New York and L.A. tomorrow and nationwide on Friday, August 12th. The joke that the movie documents in many different ways and aspects, the history of the joke, the telling of the joke, is sort of an inside joke that comedians enjoy telling because it provokes them to improvise in the darkest way. The joke is essentially a guy goes into a talent man agent's office, says, look, I got an act you got to see. You're going to love it. You're going to want to book it. The agent goes, what's the act? And the guy goes on to describe usually a family act that involves him, his mother, his kids, a dog. It involves incest, extreme sexual behavior, blood, pee, poo, any number of vomit, projectile vomiting. And it can go on for hours, and it is an exercise in, you know, horrendous comedic improvisation that needs to be seen. And the punchline, of course, is always the agent goes, well, what's the act called? And the guy goes, The Aristocrat. Now, our booker, Lucy Kerrigan, saw the film. I saw the film, and she was, you know, not just disturbed, but appalled.
Yes.
Now,
yes. I was... Well, no, I mean, I don't think I was appalled. I was dismayed. I was horrified. I was, this is not funny.
Dismayed.
Why? I was dismayed.
Dismayed.
Yeah, I was dismayed by this. Why is it funny to go in this direction, to experiment in this direction?
But
why is it funny?
Why isn't, well, first of all, do you enjoy maybe, you know, enjoy the old silent films? Do you enjoy maybe like a Chaplin film?
Yeah, I mean,
sure,
I haven't watched
it
in years, but, you know,
years ago. So picture Chaplin on the assembly line in, let's say,
modern times,
you know, squirting stuff, you know, doing the number. But now all of a sudden the stuff is poo, and it's pee, and it's snot. It's,
you know,
still
it's
funny.
Not just, it's just not just poo, pee, and snot. It's doing extraordinarily offensive, vulgar things to children. You know, what's so funny?
Oh,
you didn't say that.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
What's the matter with you?
We just
had this conversation not more than 2 minutes ago.
I'm sorry. I'm,
all right.
I
So you're saying,
okay, sorry, I'm so sorry, okay.
Okay,
but I mean, essentially that was it.
No, well,
that was the main thing.
Your main problem is that some versions of this joke where you have this family act where there is sexual, extreme sexual activity between family members, including very extreme sexual activity involving fists and hands and everything else, is that you're pushing the edge of the envelope. That on a certain level, if
it's not even pushing the edge of any envelope. It's just awful. It's
no,
awful.
But what's not funny about that?
It's not funny. I mean, I was sitting there in the theater. People were behind me laughing, in front of me laughing. I was saying, why are you laughing? This is sick. It's
Did
terrible.
You say that to people?
No, I felt like it. I was standing up and going, stop, everybody. This is terrible.
You use the word deprived. Now, what you're...
I didn't use the word deprived today. You gave out to me for using the word deprived.
You used the word deprived yesterday.
Depraved.
Yes, depraved.
Depraved.
Not deprived. That
depraved.
Means you don't have something.
Depraved. Now, my argument here is that sometimes the persistence and repetition of the most horrendous things, certainly in a story, eventually will have the effect where you're just like, no. And that's a laugh. That's still a laugh. It's your personal line just has to be set a lot more forward than most other people's that were enjoying it. Some people like to hear that type of freedom of speech engage because it is truly shocking.
It's not to me anything about freedom of speech. It's nothing. I mean, you can say what you want. I absolutely don't mind what you say, where you say it, how you say it. I just don't think it's funny. I mean, this particular joke, it's not a good joke. You know that. You've said that it's not a good joke.
It's not a good joke, but
what,
when you...
The Aristocrats? What? Come on now.
It's not the issue of the joke, but when you hear, like, George Carlin improvise on it, and you get the hinge of the joke, you get what they're trying to do here, and you're wondering where these guys are going to take it, and when George Carlin literally says, you know, as the big payoff of his version of the Aristocrats, Democrats that the guy bends down and defecates in the woman's mouth.
Awful. I mean, awful. Okay. Don't remind me. Don't remind me.
It's awful. Granted, it's awful if it were really to happen. But George Carlin telling it with a face and making the noise is hilarious.
Now, is George Carlin the one that tells the fisting joke? Now, who's the one that tells the fisting joke?
It's a theme. It's a theme throughout the whole joke.
There's a lot of fisting references because, think about it, Kalo, when you have...
Kalo,
when you have these types... Look at me, buddy.
Yeah.
When you have these types of references...
You can't talk in the mic and look at
me. When you have that type of references, you get the option of actually raising two on each arm and doing a dance, you know? So you got a couple of kids, one on each hand, and you're dancing around. Now, you see, you're laughing. Why are you laughing? Because it's heinous, but it's funny because it's ridiculous.
Yes.
What's it, Gelman? I can't even imagine. What you're
Wayne knew that.
Defecating in a woman's mouth?
This was part of a joke. It's part of one version of the Aristocrats joke that is in the film.
You find humor in that?
Here we go.
No, thank you. This is not a challenge.
Wayne.
I respect your talent. One day I'm going to go out and see you.
In other words,
I am not saying. I am not saying that I would do that joke.
Oh.
What I'm saying is that in honoring the context of the Aristocrats and pushing the edge of what you were willing to say, where you're willing to go, in all recesses of your imagination, in order to try to make this as disgusting and graphic as possible, First of all, it is funny. If you were to see that on stage while someone was juggling, you would be going, this is ridiculous. It's I can't sit through it anymore. I'm about to cry, and then you would laugh out of discomfort.
I'll go back to the newsroom.
I just want to ask you one. Why does this joke need to be honored by anyone? You won't do it. You've never done it. Why does it need to be honored?
I got to be honest with you. When I was starting out, I did some heinous jokes in order to shock people into laughing. Now, the reason that this joke is being honored is because they are trying to capture the secret society, the secret culture of stand-up comedians and of entertainers. Because you have to understand something. As a clown, as a performer, as somebody who gets up and tells jokes every night, that your understanding of what funny is, you're going to become very jaded after a certain point of time. You're going to say, we all know what funny is, but a lot of comedians I know laugh like this. Oh, yeah, that's funny. Mm-hmm. All right, so they have to say that it's funny because they have pushed their line so far back in their head that this was an exercise that they all used to do to sit around and push each other's line. And what used to engage them was the fact that they had the freedom and they had the lack of I think, what would you call it, self-censorship to do this, and this is how they entertain themselves. So I don't think this movie is essentially about the joke, but it is about, what comedians are as a culture and what they had to do to entertain themselves, and it also sort of a window in to just how far comedy can and will go if it's if you have the guts to do that.
Well, I don't know what to say. I mean, to me, again, it's a sort of dismay that this is, the line is so far back that you have to go this far and you think it's funny. It troubles me. What do you mean it troubles you?
What kind of troubles me in myself?
It's like I left the film. I was upset by it.
You're a grown person.
I am a grown person.
I mean, Jonathan Swift has used more graphic images. Alexander Pope in satirical situations have used
more
graphic images.
It doesn't matter. The only, to be fair, the only reason why I went to see the film was because I had to produce the file. It's not a film I would normally go to see. I mean, I've got a very low tolerance level for horror films, violence. I really do. So. To be fair, that's where I'm coming from. But as somebody who had to sort of sit through it, it was not a pleasure.
My personal belief is that I don't think...
And you guys are crazy. I can't understand how you find it sort of... Not even the humor, but you're sort of working out this sort of psychological...
You're spilling the sugar.
Oh, well, yes, I am.
Lucy, let me ask you. I'm sorry. What's your favorite comedy?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you right now. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
I will admit the joke is disgusting, and I don't laugh at the joke. I laughed at comedians telling the joke. There's also a level of voice here. There are only a few comedians in that movie that actually made the joke funny. The joke is heinous. There's no way around it. But, what Paul Provenza said in here was that, look, it is about the person telling the joke. And, Carlin made me laugh. Sarah Silverman made me laugh.
True.
Yeah, and the reason reason Sarah Silverman made me laugh was because, you know, she personalized the joke. She made it her own. She talked about it as if it were her own family. And she, you know, she sort of medicized, you know, made it, just changed it up and made it very personal and very funny. The joke is heinous. And I tend to like things that are clever, that have a turn of phrase, that have some sort of animated sort of absurdity, which some people did. But just the fact of pushing it to the point where you're pushing a line, that doesn't really excite me, because it's easy to do that. You can do that in one line to make somebody that offended. But I do think that there is a challenge to the joke, and I do think that you can make almost anything funny. I'll change that. Anything is funny. Anything.
Ooh.
Aye, aye, aye.
Well, who's going
to
win?
I don't know how to fight that. I mean, I don't know what else to say. You know, it's one of those things.
You want to talk about love?
Agree to
Do you want to talk about love?
But I'm not speaking for all the girls out there. I'm just speaking for myself, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah, there's plenty of men that'll be offended by this. Are you kidding? Rick Santorum would vomit.
Oh, please do not.
He
would vomit. With that man.
Oh,
come on, man.
You're going to lump her in with Rick Santorum?
That's terrible.
It's just a matter of context. He would say the exact same thing you are.
Wow.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's true.
See,
that's,
I mean, you know what? Perverted. I mean, whatever. You know, that's, I can't, you know, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. I have to agree with him on this as well. This is terrible, but it's true.
Can I ask you a question, or can we shift gears for a minute before we go? Because we have this story here that says, according to researchers at the Imperial College in London, they developed this mathematical formula that found out that the way, what do you think, what's the way to your heart? If you, let's say fundamentally, listen to me. Fundamentally, like, you know, you have a little bit of attraction towards somebody, a guy. Okay?
Right, yeah.
What's he going to have to do to seal the deal? What has to happen?
What has to happen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God, I mean, various things.
Yeah,
various.
What's the most important thing?
He can't have seen The Aristocrat.
Well, no, I mean, he can have seen it. And
just agree with her.
No, you didn't have to agree with me. You didn't have to agree with me on that. God, you know what?
Here, I got an example.
Okay.
Let's say he took you out to get, like, let's say he took you this, like, the, let's say he took you to McDonald's. Would that do anything for you? bad example.
It's not a good example.
How about this? In an
extraordinary circumstance, maybe McDonald's would be all right.
Would it make a difference?
He'd have to be pretty extraordinary.
Would it make a difference if he spent like $200 on dinner and bought you a nice...
See, that doesn't work for me either.
It doesn't?
Know? No. No, I mean, there's much more to love and relationships than going out for an expensive dinner with some guy. I mean, he's probably some banker down the city who's boring and can afford to spend that kind of money.
Whoa. You know, what if it's not a banker?
It's not the sort of the whining and the dining that seduces this Chiquita.
Doesn't help? Does it help?
It depends.
What do you mean it depends?
It depends on who the guy is.
Well, according to this, that expensive gifts and good dinners are actually extremely effective.
Right.
In charming people. And it goes on to say that...
So what's your point? What's your point?
I was just trying to figure out who the hell you are and what makes you... Because I don't want to be depraved.
Depraved. Perverted.
I'm not that depraved.
Twisted.
I am not. A professor said, quote, there is evolutionary logic in men burning money to impress a girl, end quote.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can spend a lot of money, but you've got to have a lot. You've got to have more than money.
You involved with somebody now?
At the moment.
She's rather not
I'm
saying.
Not getting.
Come on. Have you gone on a couple of dates?
Marin. Riley, please.
We'll be right back after this.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Let's go.
Do you want to go now?
Or, yeah, sure, please.
Lisa, let me ask you something.
Am I blushing? Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. If I got you stinking drunk, if I took you to a bar and got you drunk,
yeah,
would you go home with me?
Probably not.
Ooh.
Now, why?
No, because...
Is it me, or is it, you know, because you don't like to do things while you're intoxicated?
Oh, Jesus. Jeepers creepers.
Self-censorship.
If you got yourself all drunk and then went to see The Aristocrats, would you find it funny then?
She'd fall asleep.
I doubt it. No. If I were drunk, I'd probably get up and I would say, everybody, stop. This is terrible.
Would you offer a different rendition of the joke? Maybe a cleaner rendition of the joke?
This is the way it could have been done. You know what? Against dirty jokes. Nothing against dirty jokes at all. This one in particular is just, it's not even a dirty joke. It's an obscene, horrendous, depraved, horrible...
There's that word again.
There it is.
But that sounds like a great night out. Do you ever have a...
Really?
No, I'm just saying that, removed from the joke, let's say someone gets you drunk, takes you out to a nice dinner, and you have a depraved, disgusting, horrendous night of... of naughtiness. Would that be good?
Well, that's different. You know, that's not the same thing. It's not the same thing
normal.
At all.
Now we can go to break.
Okay, 48 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.